BBC Sounds. Music, radio, podcasts.
The Archbishop of Canterbury, Justin Welby, has resigned after a report concluded the Church of England had covered up 50 years of child sexual abuse.
A church in crisis.
An independent report published last week found Justin Welby failed to act properly when he first learned the full details of the case in 2013.
The shame of what has gone wrong, whether one is personally responsible or not, must require a head to roll. And there is only, in this case, one head that rolls well enough.
In the hours after Justin Welby resigned over not doing enough to stop and bring to justice a prolific abuser, I spoke with his deputy, the Archbishop of York, Stephen Cottrell.
Today is a day of sadness. You know, I'm sad for him. I'm sad for our church. I'm desperately sad for the people who've been hurt and abused because of the church's failings and by people who were acting in the name of Christ. It's a shameful thing.
But now it is Archbishop Cottrell, the man who in the new year is due to take temporary charge of the church, who is himself facing serious questions over his handling of a priest who for 10 years was in his charge, a man who'd once been accused of abuse like this.
He'd make me kneel in front of him and perform oral sex and then punch me repeatedly in the head whilst reciting Bible verse. I couldn't believe that God would let that happen. I was absolutely traumatised.
I'm Aline McBall, the BBC's religion editor, and tonight on File on 4, we reveal that Stephen Cottrell didn't remove the priest, Reverend David Tudor, someone he knew had allegedly sexually assaulted children and about whom he'd hear further extraordinary revelations.
I think it completely undermines his credibility that this case was not acted on when he knew information at the time. How can you have the moral and ethical authority to lead an institution with that? You can't. So yes, I do think he needs to consider his position.
On Stephen Cottrell's watch, David Tudor was even operating as a priest under an arrangement many find baffling.
So that's an official sanction on the part of the church, that he's not safe to be left with children, but he can still be a minister. Okay. So the church really does have a lot of questions to answer.
Inaction by the church, including on the part of Stephen Cottrell, has left other victims and survivors of abuse feeling re-traumatised and isolated.
They endorsed what he did was okay, that affecting and playing with people's lives is okay to do that, to take their childhood away from them.
If you were sitting opposite one of the people who allowed him to continue and promoted him, what would you say?
What on earth were you thinking? What have you done?
Well, St Bede's School sits on a hill by a main road just below the North Downs in Surrey, and on the side of the building is a large metal Celtic cross, and this is one of the largest joint Church of England and Roman Catholic schools in the country. And it's here in 1980 that a young charismatic priest, David Tudor, arrived. He'd just taken up post as vicar at the nearby St Matthew's Church, and with that came the role of chaplain here at St Bede's, where he immediately made an impact.
He came along and just swept everybody off their feet. The mothers loved him, he was a very handsome man, and he ingratiated himself with them. And obviously the church has been in decline for a very long time, low numbers, low congregation. He built the church up, he's charismatic, all the kids went, there were youth groups, and this church at St Matthew's became a thing. It was, of course, he was lauded by everybody because he was great, absolutely brilliant.
Rachel Ford was a pupil at St Bede's, just as David Tudor was creating that buzz.
He was a massive part in the school life. He did some teaching of religious studies as well, and he was involved in all kinds of things, even things like netball groups, running kids around and stuff, running girls around after school. And he had an office next to the home ec room at school, which was an open door where you could go in and talk to him about anything. He was extremely popular, and he got to know everybody. He took girls away on weekends, parties at his house, you know, that kind of thing. And he was very, very popular. It's hard to imagine him. He's very tall, very slim, and he just kind of swanned around the school with everybody in his wake.
for we have seen that God is with you. We knew that in our youth in Barbados. Do we know it now in our middle age, in our older age, in England? Do we know it?
This is David Tudor at a service marking the anniversary of the independence of Barbados, the country of his father, where he was born and raised into his teenage years. Tudor then moved here to the country of his mother, where he trained for the priesthood and later landed that job in Red Hill in Surrey.
Can we create here and elsewhere a church that is a hospital for sinners?
But Rachel says at school, the popular young priest soon appeared to single her out for special treatment, even singing love songs to her.
He was very overfamiliar physically. So, come and sit on my lap, put his arm around you. Little too far, didn't feel right. Casually intimate, just flinging an arm around you, you know, in public. The kind of thing that just didn't feel right, but I was very young and I didn't really know why.
She says she wasn't assaulted by David Tudor, but does feel she was groomed. And she remembers one day when she and a friend were out walking and called at the chaplain's home to ask if they could use the toilet.
We went into the house and shouted hello and said, can we come up and use the loo? We're really desperate. And we went upstairs to his room and there was a naked girl in his bed and this girl was in the year above us at school. And she screamed, pulled the covers over herself and we ran away, mortified. And we're terrified about going back to school. We thought we'd be in lots and lots of trouble for having gone into his house when we hadn't actually said, come in. We thought we'd be in loads of trouble, but nothing happened. And that seemed weird. But he didn't say anything. When we went back to school, he acted as though nothing had happened.
Rachel's telling her story here for the first time, as is another pupil of St Bede's from the early 80s, but who doesn't want to be identified. We're calling her Debbie and using an actor to voice her words as she describes David Tudor.
He was a little bit like a Pied Piper character. He had lots of children around him. He was perceived to be very cool and very charismatic. He would have gatherings and discos at his church house where he lived, and kids would really enjoy going there and being in his presence. I was 13. He showed me a lot of attention and he made me feel very special. He told me that I needed to keep our friendship between us and things that happened, the intimacy that happened between us. He said that he would be in trouble and I would be in trouble too.
Debbie says that between the ages of 13 and 15, she was sexually abused by Tudor, something that's left her with profound trauma.
I should have had a childhood. He minimised my childhood. He took away life experiences from me. He abused his position of trust and it's had a huge effect on my life. Having that huge secret pulled me away from my parents. I've lived with shame for 40 years. Having those shameful memories of my childhood, it's going to take a long time to make an adjustment on that because my internal voices are very critical of me.
Debbie had been reluctant to go to the police because of the shame she felt about the abuse, but the police came to her after other girls came forward. She was one of four schoolgirls whose cases featured in two trials at Guildford Crown Court in 1988. In those trials, the girls felt they were up against Tudor's supporters and the might of the church. The Bishop of Croydon even telling the court at one point that Tudor had the utmost integrity. In the first trial, David Tudor was acquitted of indecently assaulting a 15-year-old girl. He admitted he had sex with her, but insisted she was 16 at the time. In the second trial, he was found guilty of indecently assaulting three other girls, including Debbie.
It was traumatic in the sense that I was on my own, having to talk about everything that had happened, the sexual abuse that had happened. He had a lot of support. When he was found guilty at that court case, people were crying, you know, they couldn't believe it. And despite him being found guilty of those crimes, the abuse of me and other girls too, people were sitting on his side still.
David Tudor did serve his full prison sentence, which was only 6 months. But the convictions were later quashed on technical grounds at the Court of Appeal because the trial judge had misdirected the jury.
In the judgment, there was no suggestion of dishonesty on the part of the girls, but for years, Debbie was unaware of the appeal result, and there was never a retrial. The church itself, though, found David Tudor guilty of misconduct and banned him, though that's far from the end of this tale. We first started looking into David Tudor because one listener, who'd been caught up in events, contacted us after hearing a File on 4 programme we broadcast in the summer.
A BBC investigation has found that a priest in Blackburn, who was assessed as a potential risk to children and young people, was given a six-figure payoff by the Church of England.
The church says it is looking into what it can learn from this case and others, and I think a lot of people are waiting for change.
That listener was, in fact, a retired vicar, one who, decades after David Tudor, held the same post as him in Surrey. In our documentary, she'd been annoyed to hear the church called that scandal rare and wanted to tell us about the case that had been troubling her for years. My producer, Steve Swan, and I went to see her.
Hello, Jenny.
Steve, lovely
nice
to see
you.
How are you?
Hiya.
All right.
Jenny Penn is enjoying the start of retirement after nearly a decade working as a vicar in David Tudor's old role. She immediately appears friendly and kind-hearted, but as it turns out, she also has a steely core and a fierce sense of justice. After she was appointed vicar in 2014, she was visited by the person she replaced and was shown some old newspaper cuttings.
You have here a cutting from the Surrey Mirror after the court case in the spring of 1988.
Jenny lays out across her dining table all the articles, local reports from those two trials in Guildford.
I mean, some of these headlines that you were made aware of, I mean, they are pretty shocking. You know, heavy petting in Bible classes, sex in the parsonage. Former St Bede schoolgirl took overdose after sleeping with Tudor. I mean, those are horrible things to be confronted with.
Yes. Well, I just felt for these girls, really, because they summoned up all their courage to appear in court, and they'd been called twisted little liars by the defence lawyers. They'd had the great and the good all lined up against them.
But Jenny's moral outrage when she first saw these articles wasn't just about the way the girls were treated back in the 80s. She was shocked to be told that David Tudor was somehow, once again, all these years later, a priest in active ministry. She saw the impact it had on some of the people around her when, on occasions, Tudor would come back to his old parish, perhaps to read a funeral eulogy.
There'll be several people who would be very angry if they knew he was back in the area.
But extraordinary that decades later, he was eliciting those kind of feelings among those in the community.
Yes, yes. As I say, old sins cast very long shadows.
Jenny was baffled as to how he was allowed back into the church when he'd been kicked out. So how did it happen? Well, after the assault trials, he was found guilty of misconduct by the church and was banned, but only for 5 years. The church has confirmed to us that in 1993, the then Archbishop of Canterbury, George Carey, allowed Tudor to return to ministry. But it says he did that, in its words, with some trepidation. But that really doesn't explain the details my producer Steve and I have seen in some leaked documents.
We got lots of documents, and looking through this one, you can see it looks like Lord Carey helped Tudor get a new job. The section down here says in 1996 he signed a memo advocating for David Tudor.
Yes, it says the Bishop of Chelmsford agreed to take him after that.
And there's a note here actually saying Chelmsford had been made to take David Tudor.
The church says it's got no record of these documents, but we found something else even more surprising.
Here it says that Archbishop Carey got a letter asking for Tudor's name to be removed from the caution list.
So that's the list held at Lambeth Palace, which is a record of all the clergy who've been disciplined?
Yeah, and it says here that Archbishop Carey agrees to that request. So David Tudor's name comes off this centrally held register, which presumably had details about him being banned for sexual misconduct involving young girls. That's pretty bad.
His slate was, in effect, wiped clean.
The church has admitted that Lord Carey did agree to remove Tudor's name from the caution list. In a statement, it now says, "We recognise these procedures were neither sufficient nor survivor-focused." The upshot of it all was that by 1997, David Tudor was back. Chelmsford Diocese had appointed him a vicar on Canvey Island on the Essex coast.
Exit the roundabout onto Canvey Road.
That's where we're heading next.
And Steve, so while clearly there was a dark side to David Tudor's character, there were those who never saw that and saw him as an asset to the church somehow.
Yeah, and we're going to go and see one of them. This is a guy who sat on the council for years, has known David Tudor since he first moved here, and has pretty much only got positive things to say about him.
Do you want a drink, the two of you?
I'm okay, thank you.
I'm also fine.
Okay.
But if you fancy one, get one for yourself.
No.
Ray Howard says David Tudor was an energetic priest.
I was privileged to meet him days after he arrived, and he was put into a clergy's property. Whilst he's been on this island for 27 years, he and his wife and family have been first class. David has had a very good following from the community, and, you know, it is disappointing when, as much as I can never be supporting anything wrongdoing in my position, but I'm talking about the fact that as someone who belongs to the church, go to church every Sunday, I have to say to you that since he came to Canvey Island, he packed the people in. And when other churches and that were going down in attendance, that he's always filled them. And he really was someone that climbed a ladder quite quickly.
More from Ray later, but with those full churches, promotion did come quickly. In the year 2000, Tudor was given a more senior role of team rector. Some of the girls affected by his predatory behaviour in the 80s didn't find out for many years he'd even been allowed back into the church. Debbie had given testimony at trial and saw David Tudor go to prison for assaulting her and two other girls. And even though the convictions were later quashed on technical grounds, she assumed he'd never be a priest again. It had a devastating impact on her to find out that he was.
It's absolutely disgusting that they supported him, that they welcomed him back into the church to have a wonderful career of promotions, of respect, where for me and the other victims, you know, the way they dealt with it, they systematically closed their doors on it. You know, they knew what happened. Let's be clear here. He got off on a technicality, a legal technicality. He did it. He is an abuser. You know, he's a paedophile, but yet they took him back into their organisation.
The church told Phylon 4 the decision not to impose a lifetime ban on David Tudor seems absolutely inexcusable in today's context. And the statement goes on, "It's clear to us the procedures in place at the time were insufficient." David Tudor hasn't responded to the BBC's attempts to contact him, and there's a lot more we'd like to put to him. In 2005, when he'd been back in ministry for more than 10 years, there was another opportunity to act. David Tudor was suspended while police investigated new allegations he'd indecently assaulted a child when he was training as a priest in London in the 1970s.
He had these little packets of sweets, and he'd put a sweet in his, like, between his teeth, and then he said, "I want you to take the sweet out of my mouth with your teeth." And so I did, and he kissed me.
Jessica, not her real name, was just 11 years old when she says she was molested for the first time. She came from a very religious family who were pleased when Tudor started taking an interest in her. They hoped he would have a positive influence. But as you're about to hear, Jessica says she was subjected to appalling sexual abuse.
I was encouraged to go and spend time with Tudor in his room. And I just remember it was very intense and very uncomfortable. He asked me to sit in this comfy chair that he had, and he would sit at my feet, and he wanted me to continue stroking his hair. Then he wanted to put his hand on my crotch, and then he wanted to put his hand down my pants. And it was just really overwhelming. But there was no escape.
Jessica says as she got older, Tudor became more violent.
He'd make me kneel in front of him and perform oral sex and then punch me repeatedly in the head whilst reciting Bible verse. That's when I totally rejected Christianity because I'd been a good little Christian. I'd been brought up in the church and I couldn't believe that God would let that happen. I was absolutely traumatised.
Police investigated Jessica's case but decided not to bring charges. A risk assessment found Tudor was at low risk of further offending and he was allowed back to work. But it was under a new, unusual working arrangement for a priest. Tudor was told he could not be left alone with children. Essex County Council advised schools not to invite him and a youth club relocated because it was on the same grounds as the vicarage. Rachel Ford, the former St Bede's pupil who caught another schoolgirl naked in Tudor's bed, was shocked when we told her about the working arrangement.
You said that you had read about the youth club having to move in Canby. Did you also know at that stage that he was not allowed to be left alone with children? Did you know?
No, I didn't know that.
So he was actually not allowed from 2008.
What?
I think not to be allowed.
But he was a minister. He was a practicing minister. What? Sorry. So that's an official sanction on the part of the church that he's not safe to be left with children, but he can still be a minister. I'm speechless.
Astonishingly, even this didn't stop his rise through the ranks. In 2008, Reverend Tudor became an area dean, supporting a group of 12 local parishes. Soon after that, he got a new boss.
My guest this morning is the 10th Bishop of Chelmsford to be installed this Saturday, a big service at Chelmsford Cathedral, Bishop Stephen.
That's right, yes, in the cathedral, 12 o'clock on Saturday. There'll be hundreds of people there. Let's hope it doesn't snow, but if it does, well, it'll just make it even more beautiful.
In November 2010, Chelmsford welcomed its new bishop, Stephen Cottrell, now the Archbishop of York, and who, in just 3 weeks' time, takes interim charge of the Church of England.
I was born and brought up in Essex, and I've had a fantastic welcome back into the county. I think people are glad, you know, to have an Essex boy as their bishop, and I'm certainly very glad to be here.
He's confirmed to us that in his first week as bishop, he was fully briefed about David Tudor, but says he wasn't able to take any disciplinary action because there were no new complaints that hadn't already been dealt with. But then in 2012, he was told something that did happen recently, that David Tudor had paid compensation to one of his alleged victims. It was Jessica, who described to us how she'd been abused, sometimes very violently, from the age of 11. At the time, Tudor had been in ordination training. She sued him directly, and he made an offer.
I couldn't take action against the church because he hadn't been ordained. It took 3.5 years and we settled on £10,000. Nobody would make a payment if they hadn't got something to hide. So, you know, it was an admission of guilt.
But when we asked, Stephen Cottrell's office told us the payment made by David Tudor admitted no liability and that the bishop was guided by legal advice that no further action could be taken by the church. It's a decision that frustrates and bewilders retired vicar Jenny Penn.
Surely alarm bells should have rung then, and reassessment of the case, and I would have thought removal from office, because as far as I can see, nothing appears to have been done.
So he knew David Tudor's history, knew he was a vicar banned from being alone with children, and then also that he'd paid thousands to an alleged victim. The then Bishop, Stephen Cottrell, may say he didn't have the power to remove Tudor from ministry, but in 2015, under him,
the priest received a new honorary title in Chelmsford.
David Tudor is made canon of the cathedral, giving him more standing, more status in the community, and more reasons for people to trust him. It just doesn't really add up. Why would you do that? Why would you promote somebody who's a liability?
Stephen Cottrell declined an interview for this programme, but his office says the new title for David Tudor wasn't a promotion or personal reward, but happened because of a change in policy, meaning area deans were automatically made honorary canons. A statement says that this policy change enabled this to happen is a matter that Stephen Cottrell regrets.
I certainly would not have made a priest an honorary canon in those circumstances. Absolutely not.
The Bishop of Newcastle, Helen Ann Hartley, has recently appeared something of a lone voice in the upper echelons of the Church of England, vociferously calling out the institution's failure to deal with abuse and to listen to victims. In an interview with me last month, she became the only senior serving cleric to call for Justin Welby to step down. It was after a report into a prolific abuser found the Archbishop of Canterbury had personal and moral responsibility to have done more. Now she's shocked about many aspects of this case and the Archbishop of York's leadership, including the fact David Tudor was made honorary canon on his watch.
It's simply not good enough, because how does that look like to the outside world? If you appoint somebody an honorary canon, the clue is in the title honorary, and that's certainly not somebody who should be honoured in that way.
So we're told that it wasn't a reward.
You can't justify that. That's an excuse that's unjustifiable. I mean, if you make somebody an honorary canon, and I know this because I have done that with in consultation with the dean and chapter, you are absolutely uplifting somebody's ministry as an example and a model of good and best practice. And you're celebrating that, actually, by making them an honorary canon. So to say otherwise, or to say that it's simply because they held a particular role of area dean, is ludicrous.
Archbishop Cottrell's office says this was a highly unsatisfactory and problematic case, an invidious situation that Stephen Cottrell lived with every day. The statement adds he was regularly briefed about it and worked diligently and professionally to do all that could be done to manage and minimise the risk posed.
I don't think that's an adequate response at all, because any action that could have been taken by the Archbishop of York should have been vastly stronger than simply to try and manage a risk, particularly if the priest in question is already banned from working with children or entering schools, for example.
What action could have been taken? Because what we're hearing from Archbishop Stephen Cottrell is that there were no avenues available to him.
As a bishop, if I was given that information in 2010, I would have applied to the President of Tribunals to allow a case to enable a priest to be removed from office to be held out of time. I am pretty sure that a review of evidence would have enabled a disciplinary process to go ahead. The risk for the bishop would be to be sued as a bishop. That is a risk that I certainly would have taken, because there's a moral and ethical obligation to proceed in response to something as serious of this nature.
Finally, in 2018, 8 years after Stephen Cottrell became Bishop of Chelmsford, a series of things happened that meant the pressure to act was really building up. It started, though, with an increasingly irate vicar and a letter from the Archbishop of Canterbury.
So here we have Justin Welby's letter to all the clergy in the Church of England following the ICSA inquiry.
So this was the big investigation into Charles sexual abuse.
Yes.
And at the conclusion of that, this was a letter that was sent out to all clergy.
Yes.
And and it says what here, yes. You've underlined a little bit.
Yes, I mean, this was what stood out to me and stirred up emotions in me, saying that we must not simply say sorry, but that we must also take action that demonstrates clearly that we have learned the lessons.
Jenny Penn, then in David Tudor's old post, wrote to Justin Welby 3 times to ask why Tudor was still a member of clergy elsewhere. 3 times, the Archbishop's staff told her the matter had been dealt with.
I still felt that I hadn't had an answer to the question, why is this person still in post? To me, it was quite clear-cut that this person shouldn't be in post, but they couldn't provide a satisfactory answer as to why he was.
The church told us Archbishop Welby took Jenny's letter seriously and referred her concerns to those responsible for safeguarding. A few weeks after Jenny started lobbying the Archbishop, by coincidence, there was a separate, important development. One of the girls who'd taken David Tudor to court for indecent assault in the 80s issued a claim for compensation from the church.
We wanted to achieve some justice for our client who'd been let down through the criminal process, and we wanted to obtain some acknowledgement that this had in fact happened.
David McClenahan is a partner at Bolt, Burden, Kemp Solicitors who brought the claim on behalf of the woman. The church agreed to a six-figure payout and an apology to his client, but he says he's still mystified as to the way the church handled it all.
So in my view, the quashing of the conviction should have had no impact on the church's response to these allegations. The church's duty was to remove him entirely from practice, from ministry, and to make sure, from their point of view, that he was at no risk to the congregation. I think most normal members of society would assume that a man of God, a vicar in the Church of England, should not be somebody that has a prevalence for committing acts of abuse against children.
But David said he felt there was something unusual about the level of protection David Tudor seemed to be afforded by the church.
One of the most surprising aspects of this case for me was that they in fact suspended him on full pay, and they, over a period of time, funded his accommodation and lifestyle.
Yes, David Tudor was suspended, but because of yet another turn of events. In 2019, he was arrested in a newly revealed case of suspected indecent assault from 1983. At that point, Bishop Stephen Cottrell took what his office describes as that immediate and decisive action to suspend Tudor, though some aspects of what happened next don't appear particularly decisive. By now, the church had assembled what it calls a core group of local and national clergy and safeguarding and media advisers to decide what to do about Tudor. Among them was Reverend Jenny Penn.
To me, it seemed like common sense, you know, that this person was a risk. And so why not remove this person from being a danger to children and young people? That seemed to be the overriding factor, keeping the children and young people at the focus of all we do, especially in this sort of context of being a priest in the Church of England. But yes, our systems and our mechanisms seemed to be very unwieldy.
In fact, it wasn't until 2020 that Tudor, suspended but still living in a church house, even lost the title of area dean and honorary canon, and only then because his term of office expired. We've seen minutes from an earlier meeting showing the bishop responsible for safeguarding suggested Stephen Cottrell could have removed Tudor's title straight away, but he didn't. We put this to Archbishop Cottrell, but he said he wouldn't go into issues discussed at confidential meetings, except to say that Tudor's suspension meant he couldn't exercise those roles in any case.
Three knocks on the west door of York Minster, the traditional way for a new archbishop to introduce himself.
It's at this juncture that in a service that was entirely video conference because of coronavirus restrictions, Stephen Cottrell was elevated to Archbishop of York, leaving Chelmsford after 10 years to become the second most senior cleric in the Church of England. So what about the case of David Tudor that he was leaving behind? Well, Tudor remained suspended for years. But when police ended another investigation without bringing charges, a church tribunal was convened. At the heart of it was strong testimony from two women brave enough to come forward. Finally, just 2 months ago, David Tudor, now aged 69, unexpectedly admitted sexual misconduct and was kicked out of the church. It came 37 years after he was first accused of sexual assault.
The Bishop of Chelmsford says she welcomes the decision to strike off a vicar from Canvey Island after he admitted historic sexual abuse allegations.
The tribunal heard David Tudor formed relationships with two girls, a 15-year-old and a 16-year-old, between 1982 and 1989.
When I heard, it was a massive relief. Like, he's out of the church, he's not in a position of respect and power and authority anymore. But it just brought up all the horrible things. He should never have been let back into the church in the first place, and this should have happened over 30 years ago. And how can they forgive him for the things that he's done? How can they think that that's okay? It just contradicts everything that the church is supposed to stand for. It has taken its toll, and it has affected my ability to live my life fully and to reach my potential. I've just been traumatised by it.
That was Jessica, who told us of the abuse she'd suffered from the age of 11, and Debbie, who remember had faced the might of the church in that trial in the 80s, had lived through massive upheaval, having to move away from her hometown.
I think it's far too late them firing him now. He's had a life, a career, back being respected on a stage that he's needed to stand on. I'm really angry at the church. I am. It's very clear to me they sit on the side of a paedophile. They supposedly are an organisation of trust. For him to have a career, it's disgusting. It really is. It's a mockery. It felt like he was protected. It was just so wrong.
But not everyone even thinks David Tudor should have been struck off, charismatic and popular priest as he was to many, like Ray Howard, the former Canvey Island councillor we heard from earlier.
At the end of the day, you know, we're talking of 40-odd years ago, and that is a long time.
And if that was a relative of yours, a daughter, a granddaughter, you wouldn't let it go, would you?
No, but I'm not in that position. I'm a public servant in this community of Canvey Island, and I'm saying how I have found a man who has been so well-liked. There was a process where I was hoping that he was going to be cleared and come back into our church. We were all disappointed.
There might be some people listening who will wonder how you can look past the fact that he did these things in his past.
I can't answer that. I can't answer it. All I do know is that the police had that case under control and investigated it for some time, and they came back to say they're not taking any further action.
It all gives us a sense of why, in some ways, over the years, the church did support and protect David Tudor. Just in the past couple of weeks, we visited the rectory on Canvey Island that he was in the process of vacating, but he didn't respond to our efforts to speak. But we've seen evidence he's officiated at a funeral since being banned. The church says it hasn't got the power to stop banned clergy conducting funerals at local authority crematoria, galling for his victims, ones he'd already left without proper resolution. In that church tribunal, when he was finally dismissed, while he eventually stopped disputing victims' accounts of abuse, he said he couldn't recall the incidents, something that upset the mild-mannered retired vicar, Jenny Penn.
He says he doesn't remember, but I'm sure the girls who were stalked and groomed and abused, I'm sure they remember.
And how does she feel about Archbishop Stephen Cottrell, who'd been in charge of David Tudor for a decade?
I feel he needs to consider his position, really. It's very hard to put yourself back in the context of previous times, and safeguarding has become rightly more of a priority over time. But I think there is value in looking back and looking at some of the decisions that were made and reviewing those, and maybe, if you are personally involved, reviewing your own position.
Victim Jessica put her thoughts about Stephen Cottrell in even stronger terms.
It feels like he's spat in my face. I think he should leave the church as well. The church have a history of handling these cases atrociously. It's just abominable that they can do this. It's unbelievable. I'm lost for words.
The Archbishop of York says in this case he did what he could to manage and minimise the risk posed by David Tudor. But what message is sent by the church's handling of him, welcoming him back, allowing him not just to stay in ministry, but rising through the ranks? What message does it send to victims like Rachel?
I'm very angry about the church, really, really angry about the church. There is absolutely no way that the leaders of the church, even at the highest level, didn't know. And they disregarded it. They kept it quiet. They hushed it up. And I think that's despicable. More despicable because they're people of God.
These are extremely serious offences. And it does ask the question, I think, about the dysfunctional and unhealthy culture within the church that normalises charisma, if you like, over actually drilling into what's really going on.
Bishop Helen Ann Hartley says she's exhausted by the inability of the institution to which she belongs to respect abuse victims and do the right thing. She feels the details of this case alone show Stephen Cottrell is unfit to lead the Church of England and should resign.
I think it completely undermines his credibility that this case was not acted on when he knew information at the time. How can you have the moral and ethical authority to lead an institution with that? You can't. So yes, I do think he needs to consider his position.
This File on Four Investigates podcast was presented by Aline McBool. The producers were Steve Swan and Hayley Mortimer. The technical producer was Craig Boardman, and the production coordinator was Tim Fernley. The editor was Carl Johnston. It was a BBC long-form audio production for BBC Sounds, where you can listen to more episodes of File on Four Investigates, including The Priest and the Payoff, our last programme on safeguarding failures within the Church of England.
Sean Diddy Combs has occupied a top spot in the music industry for decades. He earned his stripes during the golden age of hip-hop, and he's been called rap royalty. Now, Diddy sat in jail awaiting trial. He denies all the allegations. I'm Anushka Mutanda-Dawati, and from BBC Sounds, this is Diddy on Trial. Every week, I'll be examining the latest allegations, interrogating the rumours, and answering your questions. Listen on BBC Sounds.